Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carl Nordgren. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius, our weekly show. I'm so happy you're with us today, as that wonderful introduction that the radio station produced for the show talks about this expansive view that I've been taking for a little over a year now on this show with you all, this expansive view of creativity. Today, I'm going to take this expansive view and I'm going to make it an extended expansive view as I explore how our wonderful and our natural creative qualities just might. Can they inform our political conversations? I want to take this that way. I want to take this in that direction. A little warm-up first. For the past year or so, I've been reading a great book. Have you heard of The Dawn of Everything? It's such a great book. And it captures the extraordinary political imaginations that our ancestors had. It's the sort of book that I am incapable of reading straight through. I keep doubling back to reread sections because what I read makes me so much smarter. I want to read it again with more understanding each time. I don't know if you're that way with important, exciting books. It was written by an anthropologist and an archaeologist, and it's based on extensive studies of the last 4 to 5 decades of both field research and ethnographic study exploring our human beginnings. And there's been so much more research here in these last decades as more countries have opened up for this sort of field research. People are studying sites that have never been studied before. And what this book has concluded feels like a full-on assault of what we once upon a time mostly assumed about our human journey to arrive to where we are today. For instance, what we were taught about what happened in and around the thing that we call the agricultural revolution, how we treat it as inevitable, that foraging led to settled agriculture, led to private property, led to towns and a hierarchy and states. Well, that's shown to be mostly conjecture with a very, very different story that emerges. It's not at all a straight line. It's not at all a revolution. This book is optimistic at the most fundamental levels. It shows how from around 25,000 BC, plus or minus, pretty much up until the crossover into the early ADs, plus or minus, all around the world, we were organizing our political structures so creatively, so thoughtfully, so intentionally, and in so many different ways. For instance, people whose lives depended on an efficient communal response to a seasonal spike in a food resource. What do I mean by that? When there's a salmon run, or all of a sudden all the nuts are ready to be harvested, right? There's a spike in the food resource that they depend on. Well, when that spike occurs, there's so many different instances of the communal response being that to organize themselves differently during that season, to organize themselves in a hierarchic fashion with a leader who has the power to direct their efforts so that they can efficiently harvest as much as they possibly can of this necessary protein for them. And in most of these early societies where this hierarchic community was created, most often that was a male leader in charge. But then we would reorganize our society for the rest of the year when the season ended. And most frequently, the political structures we created then had a whole lot less structure. Then it was often so that leadership was the wise and persuasive voice of someone on a particular topic. And later another person's view on another topic might take the lead. And in this instance, women fully participated. And of course, it varied all around the world. This varies. But these sorts of very flexible, adapted, resilient structures are seen all over the world. And then this is a little bit of magic for me. Yeah, I think this is just a little bit of magic that the leader from the resource harvesting days, right? The person in charge of making sure that we net as many salmon as we can, the leader from the resource harvesting days, would very, very likely be motivated to moderate his approach to that leading, to become less autocratic, less dictatorial, less ferocious, less fierce, because that leader knows that when the seasons change, he loses his leadership and he's going to become a community member, just like the rest of the folks. Right? So what kind of impact does that have on one's aggressive leadership if they know that, boy, if they abuse that leadership when they have it, they're going to lose it and they're going to have to live with the people who they potentially abused, had to have a wonderfully moderating effect on that hierarchic leadership when it did exist. There's also abundant evidence, again, from many, many different early cultures all around the world, that many of them had no problem with an individual's wealth creation, with an individual working hard and aggregating wealth, however that particular culture designated wealth. But as they accepted this wealth creation, they did not accept that it should be transferred into greater power or greater influence, and they developed all sorts of practices that emptied that wealth of any extra influence that it might have. And I want to stress this one more time, folks. This is not geography-driven. There are examples of cultures immediately adjacent to each other living in the same ecosystems who make very, very different intentional rules, right? That's all – everything suggests that we were making very intentional decisions about how we wanted to live our life together, how we wanted to cooperate with each other, how we wanted to be in relationship with each other. This was not just something that the geography dictated. There's been books that have been written, right, that says that the geography that we, you know, that we found ourselves in was what shaped us. And these guys make a very, very compelling case that says that's a little bit too simplistic. That's a little bit too simplistic. So with this as context, with this wonderful exposure to the fact that we've had wonderful political imaginations all throughout our human development, we've had wonderful political imaginations all throughout our human development, with this as context, let's call for a productive, a creative political imagination amongst us that will serve us going forward in these times of extraordinary change and turmoil. And I'm going to share with you a little bit of my thoughts about that when we come on back from the break. Thanks very much.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. I'm Carl Nordgren. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9. Thank you for coming back. In the first segment, I was sharing with you some of my thoughts and observations about this extraordinary book that I'm reading, The Dawn of Everything. The Dawn of Everything. It's a thick book. Man, oh man, there's a lot in there. If you're going to take it on, you're making a commitment. I took it on about a year ago. I don't know when I'll finish reading this book. And so I dipped into that book to introduce the idea that all throughout our history, we humans have had a wonderful political imagination about how we should organize ourselves, how we should live together, how we should harvest resources and share them. Right? We've had wonderful imaginations about that. And so I'm hoping that we can spark that imagination one more time because we certainly need it. Does it seem possible to you? Does it seem possible to you that at times like these, with this fierce, fierce cynicism baked in, can a radical naivete serve us, maybe spark this political imagination? I hope so. Because for a little while now, I've been recruiting my friends and my family and my colleagues to a political understanding that could play an important part in saving our country. And how radically naive is that to suggest that one has an idea that might have a positive impact on saving our nation? Well, I've shared this understanding with folks, and as I've listened to their thoughts, as I've listened to their reactions, they're helping me shape this understanding into a three-part idea. Here's that three-part idea. Our nation's critical need for common ground is found in our shared creative genius. Our nation's critical need for common ground is found in our shared creative genius. We are all living together, all of us, in the first days of a shared future of unknowable unknowns. We all together face a future of unknowable unknowns. And third, we can be rationally optimistic about that unknowable future because there's no better preparation for that unknowable future than each of us and all of us playing to developing our common ground natural born strengths by intentionally developing our creative and entrepreneurial capacities and helping others develop theirs. In the face of this unknowable future, we have an opportunity to be rationally optimistic because what is needed most of all is what we have, is what's baked into us, these wonderful creative and entrepreneurial qualities. And so now I'm going to recruit you. I'm going to open up this idea, this three-part idea a little bit. Thanks for listening and attending to this with me. Please share your thoughts and advice. Carl, C-A-R-L, at creativepopulist.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts, please, about this. Because it's undeniable that our country is badly fractured, which is, I guess, the acceptable way of saying Americans don't like each other very much, do we? Large majorities from both parties now see the other side as not a loyal opposition anymore. More and more folks see the other side as something like an immoral enemy. And our current political language and behaviors have been so weaponized in this process that they won't be able to help us get to a better place. What can help, I believe, and I think I've got good reason to believe it, folks, what can help is our full embrace of the common ground discovered in the NASA-involved research that found that we are all born with such remarkable creative qualities that 98% of you, 98% of us, perform on a creativity assessment at NASA's creative genius level. The researchers recruited 1,600 4- and 5-year-old school children and gave them NASA's assessment, creativity assessment. 98% scored at NASA's creative genius level. That's our common ground. Yours and mine, the folks all around you, that is our common ground. I've been sharing that research finding for 25 years to close to 20,000 folks. And it's clear that our creative common ground is as attractive to the left as it is to the right. It is as useful to rural folk as it is to those in urban and suburban settings. It is as important to old as it is to young, to those who have and those who don't have yet. And when sharing this message and the supporting information that comes with it, I find that everyone is eager to embrace this as our common ground. And when I invite folks to consider that each time they walk into a room, it's filled with creative geniuses, some you know, some are strangers, all creative geniuses, well, they're ready to accept that that's what happens when they walk into a room. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, let me talk a little bit more about it. We share a second important piece of common ground when we fully appreciate that we are all living together right now in the first days of our shared future of unknowable unknowns. It's here right now. When I taught at Duke, I used to refer to it, the future, thinking it was 10, 20 years from now. Well, I'm realizing of late that those 10, 20 years from now are right now. And this future, it's right here, right now, this unknowable future. Why is it unknowable? Because it's defined by constant and unpredictable change. And there will be more fierce disruptions like the one that we just went through, except it won't be anything at all like the one that we just went through will. It'll be its own brand of disruption. And there will be wonderful and wild and thrilling opportunities, opportunities that we just can't even begin to imagine. Evidence our unknowable future is here now is found, well, just about every place we look, isn't it? Found just about every place we look. AI, in all of its guises, has busted through dramatically, and its impact on employment has already started. Witness IBM CEO announcing that they won't hire any new employees to do work that they anticipate AI will do. And at the same time, predicted nearly 8,000 jobs will be replaced by AI's various applications in the next few years. A study from the massive consulting firm McKinsey and their Global Institute predicts that 45 million jobs, or roughly a quarter of employment, could be lost to AI by 2030, folks. That's, of course, just 7 years from now. And yes, there are predictions that AI will generate new jobs, but as Dell Technologies and the Institute for the Future discussed and revealed in their recent report, 85% of the jobs that will make up that economy in the next decade, they don't exist today. So in the face of this unknowable future, when futurists acknowledge that when they're making predictions about future events and trends, their most likely scenario isn't very likely, we need and we can engender an important rational optimism, because the very best way to prepare for an unpredictable future, to make ourselves ready for all those unknowns, is to intentionally develop our creative and entrepreneurial capacities and behaviors. And as we've established, that's playing to our strengths, all of our strengths. Plus, it's fun. And we'll talk more about this when we come back from the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thank you for coming back. We've been talking about how when we develop our creative and entrepreneurial selves, we will be best prepared to create advantage as we make our way through whatever we find in this future of unknowable unknowns, make advantage for ourselves, create advantage for our families and communities and for our country. So here's a couple of political implications that I think. Remember, I said that our old political language has been so weaponized. Well, here's a way to think about politics through the lens of these creative messages. We talked about AI. Let's revisit AI, the job loss. The job loss is happening. Folks, I'm sure many of you are aware that the largest operating cost most businesses have are employee costs. The largest operating costs most businesses, most industries have are employee costs. Somewhere between 30 and sometimes as great as 70% of operating expenses are employee costs. As businesses invest in AI and other automations and people lose their jobs, these companies are going to become so profitable, right? Profits are just going to shoot up, skyrocket. And so with that as motivation, they're going to look for more ways to use AI and more ways to use other office automation. And there's going to be more job loss. Well, folks, there's going to become a moment in time where the job loss is going to be so profound that markets are going to lose their purchasing power. Right? There won't be any money in the market to buy these highly profitable products and services that these companies are making. And so companies are going to realize at that point, and hopefully sooner, that it's going to be in their best interests. It's probably going to be necessary for their interests for them to support a universal guaranteed income, right? A basic wage that people are talking about. Well, you know, without creative political leadership, even though that will become necessary, it could still be seen as just another welfare handout, right? And dismissed as just another welfare handout. And people will be not demonized, but they'll be, you know, they'll be put down because they're using this monies. Well, if we preceded this, if like right now, savvy political leadership were to say, Let's cultivate all of our creative and entrepreneurial people here in small towns, out in the countryside, in cities, in suburban. Let's everybody develop their creative and entrepreneurial qualities so that when the day arrives, when the government starts cutting checks for everybody, a universal guaranteed income, it's not an expense. It's not a welfare handout. It's an investment. It's an investment in all this wonderful creative talent that exists and that we've been helping cultivate and develop, that leadership has been so invested in helping this develop and grow, so that when this monthly income comes along for these folks, there's freedom and makers can make and creators can create and builders can build, right? And growers can grow. A bottoms-up creative renaissance can occur if we handle this correctly. And by handling it correctly, it's as simple as just committing now. Committing now to the importance of cultivating and developing our creative and our entrepreneurial qualities. I've been reaching out. I've tried to reach out to folks at the Democratic Party, had a couple of contacts there. I've been reaching out to people in the Republican Party. I've been spending a lot of time with this new Forward Party that's been founded by Andrew Yang. I'm now talking to community colleges and their business centers about how they can do pretty much what they're doing right now, just come up with a different story about why they're doing it and really take a leadership role on this idea that we need to develop people's creative qualities now so that when AI causes this terrible job loss and the markets are being supported by universal guaranteed incomes, community colleges are right there to nourish this bottoms up self-organized creative renaissance that can occur. So there's more on this, folks. I've got some thoughts about how this commitment to creativity will help create new political language, how we can talk about concepts that we really couldn't talk about before, like our nation's moonshot. Yeah, I mean, we need a moonshot, don't you think? We need a all hands on deck. Let's pull everybody together and have our own generational moonshot. And what about our moonshot be the concept of sustainable abundance? We have the knowledge. We have the resources. We have the technology. We have the people. We could create a sustainable abundance for all if political leadership would decide that that is how our efforts should be marshaled. So, folks, thanks for listening. My book, Becoming a Creative Genius Again, if you are an ebook reader, I got to share this with you, folks. If you're an ebook reader for this month of July, my book is on sale for 99 cents in the ebook format alone on most, if not all, online booksellers. If you can shop someplace other than Amazon, I'd appreciate that. But again, it's just there for you for 99 cents. All these radio shows, all the columns that I've been writing for you for a little over a year now, they're all there archived at chapelboro.com. So you can go there and see other articles and other radio, or listen to other radio shows. Thanks for coming, folks. I'll be back next week. Hope you have a wonderful week. Take care.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.